D-Mace Vinganandonic, Mike Borgonzi, and Chad Brinker addressing reporters. We take you there live.
Today, and with that being said, we're not going to comment on any of the undrafted free agents at this time. We're still working through a lot of things. They'll be available to you here at Rookie Minicamp, so you get plenty of time to talk to those guys and learn about them as well. They got to go through a lot still. We got physicals and signing contracts, so we're just not going to comment on them at this time. Also, you may be wondering, with a new regime change, that you're wondering about staff changes. We're still working through all that, so we don't have anything to comment regarding the staff at this time as well. But we are working through those things. But speaking of the staff, I thought the group did an outstanding job. It's been a long 3 months. We spent a lot of time in what we call the cave together, watching a lot of tape. This is a new process. A lot of people weren't familiar with it. It's rigorous. It can be tiring. It's a lot of late nights. And I really commend Mike Borgonzi and his staff for the work that they put in and what they have done. And I think it showed over the weekend. Mike, he led this draft process. And this is the first time I've worked with Mike, and we've worked together. And it just felt like we've been working together for many years. It was really seamless. It was good dialogue throughout. I think you can go into a draft with peace, knowing when you put the work in on the front end, and you're able to, like a good quarterback does, when you get thrown something at you weren't expecting, you have all that training in your background to adjust and try to make the right decision in a split second. And I saw some of that from Mike over the weekend as well, and I just was really impressed with him. And I think y'all had an opportunity to talk to Dave and Reggie, and also our two national scouts, Sam and Mike, and hopefully you got a little bit of a glimpse of what our staff looks like, and hopefully you're impressed with them, because this is a really good group that works really well together. We went into this season, I think we had 5 draft picks, and by the end of the draft, we ended up with 9 players. 8 of those 9 came from the Power 4 schools, and we're just really excited about what we were able to add over the weekend. It's important to us that we were going to build this thing with a strong foundation, and I think it was well documented on the character of these individuals that we brought into this football team. Now, it's going to be upon them. They got to come in here. The NFL is a tough business, and we expect them to come in and learn how to be a pro and be the guys that we think they can be to really help change the culture around here. And I know that takes some time, but it starts with getting really good football players in here who are also really good people. So we're excited about the guys we drafted. We'll go ahead and turn the questions over to you all. And whoever you want to talk about, we'll hit on all those for you, both Mike and I. Thank you.
Were there some kind of broad themes, you think, through this entire group, Chad? And you mentioned character. Are there some other characteristics that sort of define this group as a whole, do you think?
Yeah, big, fast, tough football players who love winning more than anything else. I mean, that's a Titan. I really want, I think over time, as you see how this unfolds, you might be able to draft them for us prior ahead of time, because you're going to see, like, oh, that looks like a Titan. There's definitely a DNA we're looking for in our players. And, I think everybody wants that, but it's hard to find. You got to do a lot of work. And hopefully, those guys that we're bringing in here will prove us right.
Mike, a lot of developmental, you said everybody needs development. Obviously, they do. You typically expect first, second, third round picks to contribute quickly. On the development front, you guys have talked about patience and discipline. How do you kind of blend those things together? What are you expecting quickly in terms of guys helping this team win?
I mean, our expectation is these guys come in and compete right away. No matter what position it is here. I think it's important they come in here with the right mindset, which they will. I think that was a big part of, the traits and characteristics that we were looking for. Smart, tough, competitive guys. And usually that will help in the developmental part. Because like I said, all these players need to get better. They need to develop. But if you have those traits, usually that takes you over the edge to really compete and get better. So that's a big part of it. You know, like all these guys are going to have to develop, though. But when you have those high-end character traits, the work ethic that they put in, the time, you know, weight room, film study, time in the film room, you know, I think that that helps them develop.
What's that mean about the expectations for the coaching staff?
Yeah, I mean, like we said, we want to develop these guys. So the expectation is that, you know, we have a vision for these players. I think that was a big part of it, coming in and getting the coaches involved in the process. There's a vision for these players. They know where they need to get better. So, you know, we have a great coaching staff here. So, you know, I have full confidence in them that they're gonna develop these guys into players that we think they can be.
Mike, knowing that development is so important and you being new to this coaching staff, how did you go about really getting familiar with the traits and the things that they like? And then, Chad, how did you help Mike in that process?
So, you know, the first thing when I got in here, when we were meeting with the college scouts, is, you know, actually during the lunch break, I would meet with each position group every day, and that went on for about 2 weeks. And really just to go over the scheme, the characteristics, and the traits that they look for in each player, because you have to have a vision for the player, how they're going to fit into the scheme, whether it's offense, defense, or special teams. We went through that. And as we went through the evaluation of these players, you know that's a big part of it, you know, discussing these players, where they need to elevate and get better in their game. So, you know, working hand-in-hand with the coaching staff is a big part of this process, just to know what plays in our offense, defense, and special teams, and then what do we have to do to develop these guys to moving forward.
Mike, you guys were sitting there.
One second. Chad, how did you help Mike through that process?
Yeah, you know, obviously, you know, Mike led this entire process, and, you know, that's why we hired Mike, to lead the draft, free agency, building the roster, and I have complete trust in him. And, you know, how I helped, you know, there's a lot of other people in this building that I got to, you know, care for and be there, and other departments that got to run. So one of the nice things about this setup was that while they were in the draft room, there were times where I had to get pulled away for various meetings for an hour or two. And I'd come back and Mike would say, hey, you know, we looked at these five players, but you really need to focus on these three. So it really helped my, you know, workload to be able to know what to focus on and have the full trust in Mike that I believe in him. And he knows what he's a really good evaluator. And the humility that he has is just tremendous. And it really, it helped me still be involved in the process. But ultimately, you know, my trust is in Mike. I mean, I think he's outstanding, and I'm glad we have him.
Chad, we talk about with Dave and Reggie, you know, bringing them in. Some people might not want too many cooks in the kitchen, so to speak, but I'm curious why you felt like that was the best thing. And Mike, how did that work in practice and helping you put together this class?
Yeah, you can never have enough good people. And if, you know, this structure works when you have the right people. And, you know, Reggie and I worked together up in Green Bay. I think you all met Reggie. I mean, how can you not like Reggie? He's the best, tremendous evaluator, and all he cares about the team, he cares about winning, just really good as a mentor for young scouts too. And then Dave, I've known for a long time in this league, and I know Mike and Dave have been good friends for a long time, and Dave has done a lot of good things in this league over the years, and he's another guy. He's from Ohio, grew up in Cleveland. I'm from Ohio. We had a lot of, you know, familiar connections, and it just clicks. I don't really know how to explain it. It's just working. And I think it's because it's, you know, I talk about it a lot, you know, high impact, low ego. That's what we want. We want people with low ego, but we expect, you know, you got to perform when you're in this business, and we know how hard it can be. So, you know, that's, I thought it worked really well. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, like echo some of the stuff that Chad said. You know, I've known Dave for a long time in this league, and I've known Reggie. Of course, Chad worked with Reggie. And that's the whole idea, is to get, you know, really good people in here that are selfless, low-ego people, and they certainly fit that. And they had a lot of experience in this league, and we had some great conversations, you know, during the draft and the meetings. I mean, we'd be in there all day, all night sometimes, you know, late into the night, you know, watching tape. And, you know, they've been great for me. Chad has, Reggie and Dave, the whole support system here has been great. Throw John Salgi in there too. He was in the meetings with us a lot there too. So you can't have enough good people in the room that are really good evaluators, and that's what they are.
A lot of these draft picks were captains, leaders on their team. Was that not by accident, I'm assuming? How much are you hoping they can help change the culture around here?
Yeah, I mean, like we said, those are the type of people we're trying to bring in here, high character people. You know, some of them were captains on teams, but that helps elevate the culture in here. When those people come in here and they work, there's a standard that we want to set here in this organization in terms of work ethic, accountability, you know, being a good teammate, and all those guys check the box there. And I think, you know, you look back to some of the free agents we brought in too. Like I said, if you keep on stacking those type of players in the locker room, that's going to change the culture.
Mike, how early in the process did you kind of land on favoring the developmental types over maybe some pro-ready types? And can you kind of talk through why favoring one over the other?
Well, like I said, they all have developmental, you know, things that they have to go through here. But then once you start getting into the mid to later rounds and some of these guys, you're looking at some traits, you know, speed at the receiver position with Elik and DK. And, you know, Marcus Harris is a guy that it played really one big year of football at Cal. But you saw the traits on film, the quick twitch athlete that can develop. And the same thing with Mullings, too. You know, you're looking at a guy that played linebacker for 2 years when he first came in, and really last year was really his first really workload of carrying the football. But you saw a big body there that runs hard, and you saw a lot of upside with him, and we were able to get him later on the sixth.
You guys needed pass catchers coming into this draft. What did you guys identify in the draft that led you to wait till day three? Then you found three there and whatever, 25 picks, and then also Tyler Lockett's addition. What does that do to them?
Yes. You're looking at the value of the board for these guys, and, you know, where we took Chim and Elik at that point, you know, we were looking for young guys with some speed, and they both fit that. Chim's a guy that has return ability as well. He's done punt returns. He's done kick returns. You know, Elik's a big body receiver, X receiver, that's strong, physical at the catch point. You know, he gives a good catch radius for the quarterback. So those are some of the things that we were looking at with those two guys when we took them.
Can you maybe open up the field for you, I guess, with that speed he has? What does that do not only for him, but maybe for some of the others?
I'm sorry, who is it?
DK?
Yeah. Yeah, he certainly has speed to stretch the field, and he's competitive downfield. He's smart, versatile. He can line up in a bunch of different spots on offense. And the one thing that we liked about him is just his competitiveness after the catch as well. So you got a guy that's, you know, smart, tough, dependable, can line up, and he also has a big catch radius too. So, you know, those are the things we liked about him. And then going back to Tyler too, Lockett. He's a big addition for us. You know, he's a veteran wide receiver that, you know, really, you know, he's dependable, can get open. He's got great instincts, and he's going to be great for this locker room as well.
Terrific following DK. He had the 1 year that was kind of a down year productive-wise between two. Any reason for that? Or
I think he was just going, you know, he had those few years at Wisconsin and then came in. You know, he's one of those guys that just got better every year. You watch them on tape, from Wisconsin to Florida, and those are the intangibles that, you know, we look for, guys that continue to get better.
Do those skill position players, do you think about Cam Ward's development with them at all, just how those two can kind of factor into each other?
Yeah, you know, anytime you get some young receivers in here and working with the quarterback, and really the whole quarterback room, you know, that's they have to develop, and they have to develop a rapport in here. So we're trying to get young guys in here that can develop and grow as we build this roster.
I guess also with the fit too, just maybe how those receivers fit with Cam's play style?
Yeah, well, going back to Lockett, you know, he's a guy that, you know, a lot of extended plays that Cam has, or any of these quarterbacks really, when they work outside the pocket, you know, Tyler's one of those guys that you can just find those open areas in those scramble drills, and you've saw that over the years with Russell as well. You know, DK is a guy that can stretch the field. Elik is a bigger receiver. You know, he's productive in the red zone, big catch radius, and then Gunnar Helm that we took as well too. You know, big savvy route runner. You know, good in the red zone. Also, you know, provides a quarterback a big catch radius as well, and he's got good run after the catch too.
There were a handful of guys in that third round that came off the board at receiver. You guys were sitting at 82. Was there any consideration or effort made to maybe moving up four guys in that bunch that came off before you?
No, at that point, we felt good where we were at. There were a couple of receivers on the board, I think, at that time that might have got taken right before. But we felt good about there was a you know, probably three or four players at that point. We were at pick 82, I believe it was, that we felt good about taking.
To that point, how big of a value add was Kevin Winston to be able to find him in the third?
Yeah, it was a big value because really, you know, before, you know, the injury, he was, you know, at the top of the second round for us. You know, he's one of the top safeties in the draft. You know, he's going to be fine. He had the injury early on in the season. And we were fortunate enough to get him there at that spot.
What's your guys' philosophy on taking guys coming off of injury, whether it be drafting or free agency, and working them back in?
Yeah, you just have to look at the whole history of the medical history of the player. You know, injuries are part of the game. You know, these guys that are young, and then that's why we have full confidence in our training staff and our medical staff that we work through these meetings and talk about these players and injuries moving forward. And that's why, you know, we'll make the best decision based on, you know, the information that we get, and we felt comfortable taking those guys.
Works later at guard at the start, or do you try to transition into some of the center as well?
He can do both. You know, we saw him do a little bit of it at Sac State and at the Senior Bowl when I was there. He did both. So I think he'll take reps at both guard and center.
I think DK on paper is ahead of the line as your return option.
Yeah, he can do that. He'll get thrown in the mix there as a punt returner and a kick returner. You know, he's productive at Florida doing that. He's one of those guys that just catches and gets upfield. And that's what you like about him, and he's got speed as well.
I guess the market for maybe the interest in Will during the draft and just him still being on roster, what does that say about his value with the team?
It's a lot of value. You know, I think, you know, there's going to be competition in every room, and he elevates the competition in that room. That's what we're trying to do here as we get into training camp, is have the best 90-man roster, best competition in every room, and Will certainly provides that.
Was there an attempt to move him during the draft?
There was not.
I guess that's kind of my question is quarterback position. How you feel like you are with four guys in the room? How much are you looking forward to just seeing how things kind of play out as we get closer to the season?
Yeah, that'll you know, it's a great room we have right now with those four guys. You know, that'll be up to Brian and his staff in terms of reps and as we go through the off season and get into training camp. But, you know, we'll take it step by step here, and that'll be up to Brian in terms of, you know, who takes what reps at some point. So, you know, we're not going to name any starters here, though, that, you know, right now here in the off season.
We talked about it a little bit earlier with Mullings, but just the lack of tread on the tires and for what you guys were looking to add at the running back position, how much of a factor was that? And I guess how much more difficult did it make an evaluation of a player with a limited sample size?
Yeah, I mean, he certainly jumped off the tape when I watched him in the fall. You know, he provides a different back in the room that we have right now. You know, he's 6 foot, 230-pound back. Like I said, he was a former linebacker, and it's impressive, you know, the way he just kind of hits the hole and gets upfield. He's physical, and he'll provide us that short yardage, four-minute type back. Yeah.
You've talked about a plan for a rookie quarterback. What is that plan in terms of I know you work with Brian on that, but what is the plan in terms of reps and alignment and work?
Yeah, we've had a lot of discussions with Brian about that, and I think as we head into the off season here, you know, like I said, it's going to be a competition, and these guys are going to get, you know, equal amount of reps right at the beginning, and you know, they'll separate themselves here as we head into training camp. But the idea here is to, you know, have competition in the room, and Brian and his staff, you know, as we go through the off season, get into training camp, I'm sure the reps will change. At some point, you know, when people separate themselves.
I know Cam, he had lobbied for Restrepo throughout the draft, but was there a lot of dialogue back and forth with him about some of the other guys? Because it seemed like, you know, as soon as they were picked, he's reaching out to them. Some, like, you're on the phone with them and he's calling them, those types of things.
Yeah, I mean, that's the type of teammate Cam is. And that's everything we heard about him through the process, is that, you know, he's one of the guys. And, you know, I think that's why a lot of his teammates gravitate towards him. He was you know, tweeting right at him right after that. But that just shows you, you know, his leadership, his team ability, that you know, that's why guys gravitate towards him.
As you were going through the process of evaluating him and just getting background, mm-hmm. what was that relationship like, the dialogue that you had with his father, Calvin? Like, how was that? Like, how much input did he have?
Yeah, you know, the first time we actually met his parents were before the pro day at the dinner. First time I really sat down and talked with him. And it was great. I mean, he has a great family. You know, just learning about, you know, him growing up and you know, the dad always being there for him, pushing him, and then being at his games over the years, which was tremendous. He never missed a college game that he had. And just the support system that he has there with his parents is impressive.
Do you guys know how he was so quick on the draw of reaching out to these people? Was he in the room with you guys during draft day, or was he just quick to recognize this?
He was actually texting me, but yeah. yeah, he's on it pretty quick. Yeah.
How do you think he'll do as far as, you know, he has been a great leader throughout his career. Then he steps into now a locker room with guys who are older than him. What's that transition like from y'all's experience for a young guy coming in, trying to find his way with older guys around him?
You know, a lot of that was, you know, we talked with him before the draft. He's got great awareness in terms of where he's at. And he knows that, you know, stepping into an NFL locker room, he's going to have to earn the respect of everybody in that locker room. And, you know, just first building relationships with everyone, you know, on the team is a big part of it. But that's one of the special things about him that you know, we kind of learned through the process, is that he has great awareness. And I think he knows that he has to earn the respect of everyone here.
Did you see anything in particular that kind of accounted for his huge year? Didn't do too much the first 3 years there in terms of production, but what were some of the things he did particularly well that final year? Helm.
Yeah, you know, he was another guy that just continually got better, too. He was a former receiver in high school that made the transition to tight end at Texas. And I think that was part of the, you know, you're looking for these guys that continue to get better. Like I mentioned with DK and with Helm, they got better every year. And he had a big season last year. Those are the traits that you look for, and that's what you hope to continue here when they get to the league.
Mike, when you look at these nine draft picks you ended up with, beyond Cam, how much did you feel like, okay, we got our guy at this spot versus maybe we feel good about taking a shot on potential here?
Yeah, I mean, listen, we build a front board that consisted of about 169 players on the front board, and we felt good about all those guys in certain spots. So as we were, you know, continually going through the draft, we felt good about every guy that we took at that spot. And that's, you never know how they're going to fall off the board. And usually when you get to the third round, every team has a little bit of a different draft board. But we felt pretty good even heading into the fourth, fifth, and sixth rounds that we still had guys on the board that we wanted to add to the roster.
Chad, you alluded to it off.
Okay, hold on. Go ahead.
Yeah, I know you're not talking about undrafted free agents in particular, but throughout this kind of process, has it been an attractive destination for some of those guys, this team?
Yeah, I think so. I think Nashville is an attractive place, and I also think with, you know, how the draft went over the weekend, I'm sure that made it attractive to some guys as well. But this is a good place to live. It's a good organization, you know, and Brian Callahan being our head coach, he's got a lot of relationships out there too, and it's an exciting place to be. And although I know we got a lot of work to do.
Chad, you alluded to it a bit off the top, but you've talked even before Mike got here about the importance of growing your draft assets. Yeah. You go into the weekend and end up with 9 picks, to add a day 2 pick, to trade up later and not give up a pick to do that. Do you feel like you sort of executed the game plan, so to speak, as well as you could have?
Yeah, I think I was trying to get more. I just couldn't get anybody to get a trade partner there. But, yeah, that was important to us. It was well documented.
We're not bashful about it. We understand when you're a draft developed team that you build the core of your roster through the draft, so you want to get as many of those picks as you can possibly get. And to, like I said in the beginning, going from where we started the season at 5 to finishing with 9, and even in that draft, to be able to get that third round pick was a big deal to get that. And then also making the trade up to get a receiver we really wanted and not lose a pick in the process was really important. But I think, you know, moving forward, you're going to continue to see that as we build this team. You start having success. You know, I like to get in the position where we get into the comp picks where, you know, we got so many good players, we can't pay them all, and some of them have to leave and they get paid by somebody else, and then we get a comp pick in return. And that's when you become one of those elite franchises at that point.
That was Chad Brinker and Mike Borgonzi addressing reporters at St. Thomas Sports Park. We will react to what we heard. Coming up next, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
How you feel like you are with four guys in the room? How much are you looking forward to just seeing how things kind of play out as we get closer to the season?
Yeah, that'll you know, it's a great room we have right now with those four guys. You know, that'll be up to Brian and his staff in terms of reps and as we go through the off season and get into training camp. But you know, we'll take it step by step here, and that'll be up to Brian and in terms of, you know, who takes what reps at some point. So you know, we're not going to name any starters here though, that, you know, right now here in the off season.
That was Mike Borgonzi addressing the quarterback situation with the Tennessee Titans. He was also asked about Will Levis. He said he did not attempt to trade Will Levis during the draft. By the way, we are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and this is why we're live. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service, and we are proudly presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. So one of the topics, gentlemen, that I had on our rundown today is, why is Will Levis still here? Because we thought that he might be traded during the draft. We did see a quarterback trade during the draft. The Seahawks traded Sam Howell to the Vikings for a fifth-round pick swap. The Vikings received Sam Howell and pick number 172 in the fifth round. The Seahawks got pick 142 in the fifth round.
So how many slots is that?
30.
30 slots. So that's almost a draft pick, right? It's about as close to being a new pick, swapping the pick like that, of 30 spots.
So I thought that we might see a Will Levis trade, and it's interesting that Sam Howell, by the way, was in Seattle. He goes to Minnesota because Sam Darnold went from Minnesota to Seattle, and the Seahawks drafted Jalen Milroe this weekend, so there was no room for Sam Howell. You know, but Sam Howell, I feel like, has had a similar career arc, right, to Will Levis, had an opportunity to start with the Washington Commanders. I think, if I recall correctly, he did put up some big numbers, but he didn't win very many.
Yeah, his numbers were much better than Will Levis's numbers.
Certain games, I would say he had some good games.
I think overall, his overall numbers were pretty good in Washington.
He went 4-13 as a starter in 2023 for the Commanders. He threw for 3,946 yards, 21 touchdowns, 21 interceptions.
Well, that's Jameis Winston.
21 interceptions. That's a lot of interceptions.
That's Jameis Winston.
Sacked 65 times, which led the league, by the way.
Yeah.
So that is together. Yeah. And that's still better than Will Levis, don't you think? In terms of QBR and quarterback rating, it's better than Will Levis. Not a lot better. But he held the job for 17 games, so you got to give him that.
But I'm also not willing to...
Wouldn't you say he had more trade value than Will Levis, though?
Sam Howell did?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, I would say so.
Not by a long, wide margin, but I think if you had your choice of the two, his credentials would be a little bit higher than Levis.
So if Sam Howell was worth...
By the way, he's still about the same age as Levis.
So if Sam Howell was worth what was basically a fifth-round pick swap, again, the Vikings got Sam Howell and pick 172. The Seahawks get pick 142. If that's how much Sam Howell is worth, what do you think Will Levis would have been worth?
Sixth-round pick. maybe a fifth. Sam, you said Sam was the fifth?
Sam was it was a fifth round pick swap, 172 to 142.
So I can see, you know, him, you know, the Titans getting that in return. Obviously, they didn't dangle him out there, nor it seems like they got any calls on Will Levis. But I tend to believe that if they had gotten calls, I think the Titans would have been asking for possibly a fifth round or better.
So
to start.
One thing to keep in mind, the Titans traded Malik Willis in late August. So just because Will Levis is still on the roster doesn't mean that he won't be traded before the season starts. Malik Willis was traded late in training camp. So if there is an injury, if a team has an injury or something like that, Will Levis could become a hot commodity. Now, Malik Willis was
arguably more hot because of the a team might be desperate.
Right.
As opposed to draft day. So his stock could go up, especially if Levis has a camp that looks okay.
Right. So just because Will Levis is not on the roster right now, that Will Levis is still on the roster right now, Derek, does not mean that the Titans couldn't still trade him later this summer.
No, it doesn't. I would probably, now that he didn't get drafted, he didn't get traded during the draft, I would be looking for if it's going to happen, it's going to happen right around training camp, especially if, you know, they start to see Cam Ward develop and they see that it's more likely than not he's going to be their starting quarterback. I think they're going to be looking to move Will Levis then. Or like y'all said, if somebody, you know, has an injury, because typically that's when it happens, somebody has an injury to their backup quarterback and they need another guy with experience, a young guy, then I can see Will Levis, you know, being traded. Then maybe he's worth more if that scenario happens than, say, if Cam Ward is proven that he's going to be the starting quarterback.
Do you guys think that the dynamic could work? Of Will Levis just being there, being the backup?
I'm not going to say Will Levis would be a bad teammate, nor would Cam Ward be a bad teammate or any one of those guys. They don't perceive to be guys like that, especially Will Levis, because he's been here going on 3 years now. But I just think that it probably would be best for all parties if you can facilitate a trade where Will Levis can go somewhere where he has a shot at starting, because he has no, unless Cam is just completely not ready and Will Levis has a camp that was different from last year, I'm talking about better, if he shows that he's much better, that he's developed and he's improving, then okay. But outside of that, I can't see him. I'm not sure what the benefit is of having him on the roster while Cam is on the roster as well. Because I can see if Will Levis was, you know, 30-some years old. Yeah, okay. But Will Levis is 25, somewhere around there, 26? He's still a young quarterback, 25. He's still a young quarterback. So he's looking for an opportunity to potentially, you know, one day become a starter. And he's not going to get that opportunity here. And he may not get the opportunity to be a backup either here.
615-737-1025. Your reaction to what we heard from Chad Brinker and Mike Borgonzi. We will wrap up the show. Coming up next, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025-1063 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Stillman and Company. Coming up next, I'm sure Jared has a lot to say about the Titans draft class, and we can't wait to hear it starting at 2 o'clock. But before we go, I just want to talk about this absurd story. So you may have seen that Shedeur Sanders was the victim, for lack of a better word, of a prank phone call during the NFL draft process. The pranker pretended to be Saints general manager Mickey Loomis. Prank called Shedeur Sanders. It was then unveiled by that the son of Atlanta Falcons defensive coordinator Jeff Ulbrich admitted to the prank call made to Shedeur Sanders during the draft. Now, Ulbrich, you may remember, was the Jets interim head coach last season after the Jets fired Robert Saleh. So, by the way, Jeff Ulbrich's son, his name is Jax, J-A-X. Strike one, as far as I'm concerned. I don't like the Jax, the Jackson darts. That's neither here nor there. But Jax Ulbrich was responsible for the prank call. But apparently, apparently Shedeur Sanders was not the only first-round pick or not the only draftee that was subject to these prank calls. I think a couple of the first-round picks were also victims of prank calls. And I know it seems weird to say victim and prank call because it is, you know, it's a harmless thing, right? But
however mean you might view it as, I mean, that is, to me, that's a crossing the line, right? There's a prank where everybody laughs and then a prank that really isn't funny. And that's kind of,
by the way,
I would say
the NFL is looking into the situation, specifically how Sanders' private phone number leaked. The Falcons said in a statement Sunday that 21-year-old Jax Ulbrich wrote down the number from his father's open iPad while visiting his parents' home to, quote unquote, later conduct a prank call.
Yeah, I mean, it's just they try to frame it as a mistake. That wasn't no mistake. You knew exactly. So don't, in your apology letter, I understand you want to apologize. I get it. But don't say it was a mistake. That wasn't a mistake. That was intentional. That was premeditated because you got the number probably days prior or maybe even a week prior. So you premeditated to do this. So there was no mistake whatsoever. I'm not giving this kid a pass. The Atlanta Falcons need to be fined heavily. And, you know, I'm not calling for the head. I'm not calling for the coach to be fired. But they need to sit down and have it, which I'm sure they have. They need to sit down and have a talk with him and his son. But the NFL needs to fine them heavy for this one.
The Falcons, by the way, will not take any action against Jeff Ulbrich, according to Adam Schefter. Jax Ulbrich, again, J-A-X, Jax Ulbrich wrote in an Instagram post, "I'm so sorry I took away from your moment. It was selfish and childish. I could never imagine getting ready to celebrate one of the greatest moments of your life, and I made a terrible mistake and messed with that moment. Thank you for accepting my call earlier today. I hope you can find it in your heart to forgive me."
It wasn't a mistake.
He did the right thing on the back end, but I agree with D-Mace. Like, that was, it's just a, it's, that's low. That's stooping really
exactly.
Low. And I do think there should be more of a penalty than you have to apologize.
Exactly. Like, this is one of those, like, you just don't do that.
You don't do that. You don't do that.
There's no pranks. I mean, some of these kids have gotten to a point where they throw all sort of, you know, empathy or anything else out the window. And it's, they would rather embarrass someone, you know, than anything. And it's like, that's why I said that a lot of Falcons need to be fined heavy for this. If the league wants, see, the league, you got a chance to be proactive so this don't happen again. If you just slap him on the wrist and let him go about his business, some other little kid going to do this again. But if you find the Atlanta Falcons heavy for this one, I guarantee you they will be thinking twice about, you know, prank calling somebody, especially a employee's child, a grown child at that.
Yeah, he's 21.
Exactly. Like, he know better.
Does Jax go to school? Is he a frat boy? Like, wait, what's the deal?
His
like,
name is Jax. Do I have to explain?
I don't want to make assumptions
about
baseball,
Jax,
but
I'm pretty sure.
But like, I just wonder how he would be wired to want to do that. Like, what's his axe to grind?
If I'm the NFL, I'm not allowing him in the building. I'm just not. Unless it's family function stuff, he is not allowed in the building.
According to the article, Tyler Warren, who was drafted by the Colts, also received a prank call before he was selected in the first round by Indianapolis, as did Buffalo Bills sixth-round pick Chase Lunt, an offensive tackle.
Is this like a social media thing that was going on in the undercurrent that I'm not paying attention to? Oh, this is the trendy thing to do prank calls?
I mean, when was the last time prank calls were trendy?
Well, I think when I was a kid, there wasn't Star 69, I don't think, or you would flip through the phone book and just pick a random number and do that. People did that back then.
But we were prank.
But we didn't know who we were calling.
Yeah, but
we had no idea who we were calling.
Like pizza places or something like that, or just some random person. Like, I didn't deliberately you know, try to, you know, sabotage someone's moment. You know, and I wasn't 21
right, directed,
years old.
Targeting, like, targeting somebody exactly. for that purpose. That's
10.
Not a prank call.
That's more like 10, yeah, 9
so
years old.
Is it even considered a prank call when you target somebody like that?
No, it's not a
prank
call. A prank
call is you call a random person you don't even know and do something. That, to me, is a harmless prank call. But if you're trying to be mean and target somebody, that's below the belt.
Well, I think Shedeur Sanders handled it well in stride. And one texter says, prank calls have been happening for multiple years to players. Why are we crying about this now? First of all, I don't think we're crying about it. Also,
no,
I don't recall this happening
in
the past.
Yeah, I don't recall this.
Am I missing something obvious?
I don't recall this. No.
I know that because it happened to Shedeur Sanders, it gets elevated, right? Because it's Shedeur Sanders. If it was just Tyler Warren who was prank called, it wouldn't have the same news value, I guess you could say. But I don't remember this being like – I recently learned about – have you heard about the chicken jockey? Have you heard about this?
No, I don't.
Oh, my God.
You learn something every day. Yes. Please tell me. I don't want to be chicken jockey.
No, chicken jockey, it's related to Minecraft, you know, which is now a movie starring Jack Black. But I guess what happens now is that when you go to the movie and Jack Black says chicken jockey – audience members start throwing their popcorn all over the place and making a mess. That's how it was explained to me. It's some sort of TikTok
goodness.
Trend.
and they got kids doing this. They got people doing this.
Yes.
Like, seriously. My gosh, I swear.
Now, I know during the Rocky Horror Picture Show, you're supposed to throw things, right, Willie?
Are you supposed to throw things? I never did that. I remember being in line to do it one time. You go there, but I didn't know the lines and what you're supposed to do when you go to that. But that was a whole thing, right? The midnight show for the Rocky Horror Picture Show. There's sing-alongs and prank, or I don't know. What do you do? Have you done this?
I've enjoyed that movie. I haven't gone to a showing of it.
You haven't participated
to watch with people because there's a whole thing that goes with that, right?
A texter says Cooper DeJean. Suffered was the word I came up with.
suffered a prank call
last year. Mike, who I think must be Jared, says it's happened to at least three different players over the last 10 years, and it only matters because he's a TV prospect.
No, it's still had they made it again. I dislike when people do this. Now, whether the media want to make it a big thing or not. You know, if it comes to my attention, because I've been in that situation, not getting prank call, but waiting on the call from an NFL team, that's stressful. So whether it happened 5 times last year, 3 times the year before, 5 times within the last 10 years, it's still something that shouldn't happen. And Atlanta should be fined for it. And anybody else that thinks that they don't, then they don't understand this process. They've never been in a situation like this. So people want to laugh about it. Say, well, the only reason you bring it up is because it's Shedeur. Well, that's one reason. But if it was happening to other players, I would feel the same way because I've been in that seat waiting on that call to come. Like, you don't mess around with anybody like that. You just don't. So, again, he shouldn't be allowed back in the building, his son, and Atlanta should be fined heavy for this one.
Skyler says, Jax is only being looked at like a monster because it was Shedeur Sanders. Nobody is talking about who the caller was that pranked Tyler Warren. The point is this.
I don't care whether it was Shedeur Sanders.
Exactly.
I love a good prank. I do. I love a good prank. That's a bad prank. Period. That's my point. That's a bad prank.
Just imagine all those callers out there. Just imagine your kid. Whatever it was, I mean, whether they were waiting on a call to see if they got, you know, selected to be in whatever, or they got accepted to whatever, and you're waiting there with your family, and you're already nervous and anxious, and somebody calls you, and they tell you something that isn't true, how would you feel? Just think about that. If you think it's ha-ha, then okay. All right, I get it. That means you don't take anything in your life seriously, you know? But that is one of those moments, like Willie said, yeah, they've been doing prank calls forever, and not just in situations like this. Hell, I did them when I was 8, 9 years old. but you don't deliberately, that was premeditated. You don't deliberately do that on that day, regardless if it was Shedeur Sanders or anybody else.
Hey, Willie, is your refrigerator running?
Well,
you better go catch it. That'll do it for us today. No chicken jockeying out there, young men and women. Don't make a mess for your the local employees at your movie theater. But that'll do it for us today. Stillman & Company coming up next.
Be love, love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful Monday. Peace. I know.